Queridos hermanos y hermanas, dear friends, the reference at the beginning of this morning's gospel to the beauty of the temple in Jerusalem made me immediately think, I must confess, about the beauty of our own cathedral, which was, as some of you may recall, re-blessed back in 2002 after some very extensive renovation. I must say that I think that this is really a stunningly beautiful church. The colors along the top of the aisles, the gold of the columns, the stark centrality of the altar, the figure of Christ stretched out on the cross, but also extending the gift of the Holy Spirit to all who gather Sunday after Sunday. I just think it all fits together in a stunningly, artistically beautiful fashion. I must say I have to kind of frown a little bit and concentrate to remember what it looked like before the renovation. There was a big baldacchino over the altar up against that wall, which looked like it was bronze, but turned out to be actually plaster of Paris when they looked at it more carefully. There was the pulpit high on the wall up here, gates, communion rail. In itself, it was a very beautiful building, built in 1940 after a tragic fire in the 30s that destroyed the cathedral almost completely, and then rebuilt, and at the very height of whatever they could put together during the war. And then we have this, 2002. All of that comes to mind, as you might guess, because of the gospel's reference to the beauty of the temple in Jerusalem. The result of Herod's determination to build a temple worthy of God's majesty, but also, you know, he was a genius, and it was also to be worthy of his own royal presence in Jerusalem. A couple of years ago, National Geographic had an entire issue devoted to Herod and his building in Palestine. Magnificent things, absolutely magnificent. He was a genius. The original temple in Jerusalem had been built in the middle of the 900 BC by Solomon. It was then destroyed some 400 years later in 587 by the Babylonians. 70 years later, it had been rebuilt in a very modest fashion. And then 500 years later, Herod tore it down and built what he wanted to be there in Jerusalem as a tribute to God and to himself. The sad thing about it is that it was really worthy of pride, but destroyed by the Romans in the year 70. And my real point is that when this gospel was finally written in about the year 70, 80, the temple in Jerusalem had already been totally destroyed. So one went to the temple mound and there was nothing but broken marble, burnt, charred bricks. That was all that was there. Nothing else. The people of that time had the feeling that the world was unraveling. We can understand the feeling today because somehow every disaster in the whole world comes into our homes on television every single day. And even though experts tell us that the world is much safer than it used to be centuries ago, that's not the way it feels, at least for me, because I watch the 5:30 news. I mean, no matter where we look in the world, it just seems like there's a terrible thing going on. The brutal rebellions and murders of Nigeria and Sudan in Africa, Certainly the destruction in Syria that never seems to stop, the constant movement of armies and trucks. It's on every evening news. And it must be terrible to be living there. How do you get food for your family? Just, you know, and you think that through a little bit. The rampages, religious rampages in India. The unrest in Colombia and Venezuela. A lot of desperate people all over the globe. And, you know, a lot of unrest here in the United States these days. I was at an ecumenical gathering on Thursday morning. We meet the second Thursday of the month, and it's a small group of people representing all the various religious bodies in the city. We came together, one of the Central City Baptist churches, for coffee and conversation. Very quickly, after we had gathered and got our coffee, the conversation went away from the topic that was chosen, namely something to do with the city and how to work with civil authorities and police to make this just a really good city. Very quickly, it moved away. As parents, you know, Muslims and Jewish parents and some Central City Baptist people talked about the need to console and comfort their children who were suddenly very frightened about what they felt had happened over the last couple of weeks in our country. And this week in particular. So, you know, even though experts may say it's better, it just seems to be a very difficult moment. We know that everything is turned upside down whenever God comes onto the scene. That's the purpose of the conversation and the proclamation about kingdom against kingdom and the armies of the world and all the natural events. Everything gets turned upside down when God comes onto the scene. That's what they're trying to say. And as a matter of fact, we believe that there will come a moment at the end of human history when God wins once and for all. We believe that. That's our conviction as Christians, that we're part of history and that history has a purpose and a destiny. And when it's all over, when the world is refined and society has somehow been purified, God wins. When the transformation of the universe has been perfected, as believers, we place every human tragedy in that context, in that frame of reference, because somehow God is at work. And, you know, every human action is part of that context. We're called to speak the truth as best we can. We're called to be respectful of those who see things differently than we do. We're called to be generous as possible to those in need, and to be humble before God. The prophet Micah perhaps said it best. It said, "What does God ask of you, Israel?" Ask three things: to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly. Even if the temple is at ruins, God is God, and we are God's people. And that's the point of the gospel and the readings. God is God, and we are God's people.